Welcome to Hoosier Ag This Week, the weekly review of Indiana agriculture. I'm Andy Eubank with Hoosier Ag Today. And today we have a new farm forecast from Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin, and it is a dry forecast. Also, Eric Pfeiffer is here in the studio now. Hi, Eric. What's happening in farm news?
Thanks, Andy. The in-person World Pork Expo was this week in Iowa, and we'll hear from Indiana Pork's Josh Trenary. All of the state farm bureaus are speaking out on the southern border issue. Purdue's Bill Johnson is here on the Soy Checkoff's Take Action program. And we begin with a new Purdue Crop Chat podcast with Purdue Extension soybean specialist Sean Castile and corn specialist Dan Quinn. It's available now at HoosierAgToday.com. They discuss where the Indiana crops are developmentally and how we're faring against other states. For example, Castile recalls a conversation with an agronomist in the Dakotas where they said,
"Our grass is brown. I mean, it's like August already. And so, yeah, certainly the conditions up there are much, much more dire than what we have." Conversations were that it doesn't look bad yet, but it's not going to take long for that to turn. There's a fair amount of irrigation, so some of that's going on. Some product supply of irrigation supplies is going to be kind of limited at that point, as the guy I was talking to. So, I think they're on this case of it's on the edge if we don't get some rains all season long, because they didn't get, from my understanding, the conversation I had was they didn't get much of a recharge through their winter, didn't get much snowfall, and their spring and everything, so they're able to plant quickly, but they're just going to be a day or two away from a drought.
Quinn is hearing similar reports.
I've seen reports come out of Dakota that they were scouting frost damage in 100-degree heat. The difficulty they've had, those heavy temperature swings that we've been seeing. We've seen some of that in Indiana, too, where we've seen kind of some corn coloration differential. But especially in those Dakotas, northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, where it got really warm early. A lot of folks planted heavily. They got in early, and then it got really cold, and now it's getting really warm again.
Quinn says we've been pretty lucky here for the most part.
We've been really fortunate where that rain pattern's just kind of come across, you know, Kentucky, up in Indiana, hit Ohio, and it's just really missing states like Wisconsin, Michigan.
And Iowa, they've also been missing out on the rains recently. Hear more on this discussion in the Purdue Crop Chat podcast at HoosierAgToday.com. For the first time since 2018, pork producers from across the country are convening this week in Des Moines, Iowa for the World Pork Expo. The event was canceled in 2019 out of an abundance of caution as African swine fever spread throughout China and other parts of Asia. The 2020 event was canceled due to COVID-19. Indiana Pork Executive Director Josh Trenary is on hand for this year's World Pork Expo, and he says it's good to be back.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited to be here. It's good to see people in the wild instead of in front of a screen. All the Pork Expo, volunteers and staff seem to be pretty happy to be here. I know the NPBC folks were really looking forward to getting back to a live, you know, in-person event. But, you know, a lot of careful consideration went into us and making sure all the appropriate considerations were made ahead of time and you know, they're monitoring, you know, what safety measures might need to, you know, happen during the event and paying attention to federal, state, and local guidance, and so far, so good.
The National Pork Producers Council discussed top legislative priorities at the expo, the first of which is a recent court decision striking down faster harvest facility line speeds. Trenary says that will hit pork producers, especially Indiana pork producers, hard.
While something that might impact up to 2.5% of the nation's production or processing capacity is important to all producers, you know, it definitely hits Indiana hard with, having several producers in the state that are utilizing one of the plants that were using those increased speeds for their processing. So we're definitely going to have some farmers in Indiana disproportionately impacted by that.
You can read more about the line speed issue and the impact it will have for Indiana pork producers at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
The corn crop is in the ground, coming up nicely in many parts of Indiana, and now comes the monitoring of the crop. One expert says start scouting for disease early to keep fields free of stress throughout the season. He's Chad Threewitz, an agronomy service representative with Syngenta.
Really watching and listening to what's going on in other areas. because a lot of these diseases either blow in or progress from other areas. So I think it's important to, you know, not wait till it's too late, but really just keep an eye on the crops that are in our fields, but also, you know, listen to what else is going on around us to where we may have issues starting to come into our neighborhood.
He says R1 or tassel timing has been found to be a key application point to prevent yield loss.
There's opportunities where we can go earlier a little bit in the season. And that works too, especially with products that now have longer residual. Product like Trivapro fungicide or Miravis Neo fungicide. Both those products, they work longer in the plant, more residual. So it really widens that window of disease control and helps us really protect that plant season long.
Threewitz tells Hat the benefits of a good fungicide like Trivapro go beyond disease control and include stress reduction for the corn plant, including stress of drought-like conditions.
It can help improve water use efficiency in the plant, keeping that plant from shutting down completely when it gets dry. We can, and that in turn will give us quicker canopy to closure and keep the bottom part of the plant shaded. So really helping help reduce that transpiration. And then later in the season, prolong that grain fill period, right? So the longer we can keep the plant working without shutting down or we would say dying down early because of disease or environmental stresses, that's going to really benefit us.
He adds, whether it's early or late applications, Trivapro is helping provide stronger stocks too, a major benefit come fall harvest. A shift now to a look at the markets, and it was another volatile week. It was a USDA supply and demand report week. That report came out on Thursday. And the week ended with a very volatile and significant sell-off in corn and soybeans. In the middle of trade Friday, I checked in for market analysis with Bob Utterback of Utterback Marketing Services. All the settlements from Friday coming up too. Bob?
Well, I think first go back to the reports. The corn number was obviously the more positive of the situations. Actually, I would consider a bullish surprise because they reduced carryover to 110. And most people going in would think it was going to be plus 120. So it was over 100 million bushels they saw increase in usage. Whereas the bean carryover went up 15. And so the feeling going forward was corn was going, and corn is more of responsive to dry weather in the northern corn belt. The long-term weather models came out Thursday, which were supportive. And so that's why the market bounced. But as you said, the rain came into some of the parched area, but still the weather forecasts are for the dryness in that Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, parts of Iowa, and even to go over to Michigan, northern part of the Corn Belt. So I think the high corn yields are in jeopardy, but the end of the report, acreage report in this month should show increased acres, but those acres increase are going to be in the western area. So the market's still going to have a lot of volatility, a lot of activity. Some technical people will be looking at this as a double top failure and break, and other people will be still saying that there's still one more leg up.
Bob Utterback at Utterback Marketing Services, 800-832-1488. Here's the final damage on Friday. July corn, 684.5, losing 14.5 cents. Deese down to 609.75, 6.75 lower. And in beans, it was 35.5 cents off July contract, 1508.5. Novi ended at 1438.75, down almost 21 cents. July wheat, 3 cents lower, 680.75. Livestock went mixed. August live cattle, 120.02, up $1.47. And July lean hogs, $1.35 lower at $119.97. You are up to date on the markets. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week. For nearly a century, your local farmer-owned cooperative has served this community by delivering outstanding customer service, industry expertise, quality products, and leading-edge technology to our agriculture and energy partners. Today, we're committed to cultivating success in the communities we call home by providing America's farmers with the supplies and outstanding service they need to do their part to feed the world. Agronomy, liquid fuels, home heat, grain marketing, animal nutrition, feed, and more. Co-Alliance, your local farmer-owned cooperative, continues to be your resource for whatever the day, month, or season brings your way.
After an active week this past week with regard to moisture, we're swinging the forecast back to dry.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook, brought to you as always by Seed Genetics Direct, the largest Ohio-based independent seed company and the Eastern Corn Belt's fastest-growing independent seed company. Visit SeedGeneticsDirect.com for more information. Not much happening here this weekend. However, I'm not going to say put away the umbrella just yet. I do think that as we head through this afternoon and evening, we're going to see another final round of pop-up showers, mostly west-central to northern parts of Indiana. But let's be honest, I'm not going to exclude anybody right now. I think we only end up with about 40% coverage, generally speaking, a few hundredths to a quarter of an inch. But you know how this past week has been with regard to thunderstorms when they've happened. We've seen rain totals pop up quite quickly. So I do think there's some moisture around here as we head through this afternoon into this evening. But from midnight tonight right on through the rest of the weekend, we don't see anything. Sunshine, blue sky, warm temperatures. And Monday through next Sunday, we are looking at sunny, warm, and dry weather as well. All right, that's probably too far. Monday through next Saturday, we are seeing a little bit of moisture trying to come back, streaking across Indiana overnight Saturday night through Sunday. So that's late the 19th through the 20th. This could bring a round of showers and storms that bring a quarter to 1 inch of rain. Thing is, it's mostly kind of oriented west to east. So that means northern parts of the state may end up with nothing the way we're seeing it right now. Central and southern Indiana might be on the hook for a little bit more this upcoming latter part of the weekend, Saturday night through Sunday. Everything's gone as we move into Monday the 21st, and honestly, we could be settling into another long 4 to 5, 6 day dry stretch. One thing I will say that we are on the lookout for, a frontal boundary that tries to show up here maybe in the extended forecast window around Tuesday the 22nd. I'm not going to really hang my hat on this yet because it really, I think, is dependent on how things come together out west. And let me be clear, we are seeing a big upper-level ridge settle in over the western half of the country as we move through next week. If that still wants to expand east, that's going to take away our threat of moisture in the extended weather forecast window. But right now, I'm going to say there's still a chance around the 22nd, and then the rest of the extended window is warm, is humid, and that makes for some instability. So pop-up showers and thunderstorms from likely the 23rd right on through the 26th into the 27th. Coverage, though, no better than probably 30% of the state as those showers and storms pop up. So again, we're painting a drier picture here going forward. I'm Ryan Martin.
Bain Welker Equipment and Case IH know the health and protection of every seed and plant contributes to your bottom line. That's why we've added Case IH sprayers at all our dealerships. Get the best service and genuine Case IH parts with our expert techs. Case IH Trident and Patriot sprayers are engineered to allow time to work for you. Get in the field earlier, cover more acres, and get more done in a short amount of time. Stop in and ask for genuine Case IH parts and service or visit Bain-Welker.com. Bain Welker Equipment, employee-owned, customer-focused. Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. We're running down the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. High oleic soybeans offer a growing market for soybean farmers and a heart health benefit for restaurants and consumers. United Soybean Board Director Kevin Wilson, who also farms here in Indiana, says high oleic soybeans were launched in 2012 and completed the global regulatory process in 2018. Demand for high oleic soybeans has grown since.
Once we got that clear, then a lot of the food companies started getting more and more on board and taking a look at the high oleic oil and all the different benefits and all the positives that it has. This year, looks like we're going to plant about 600,000 acres of high oleic soybeans. Hopefully next year, it's projected that we'll get up over 1 million acres.
High oleic soybeans offer several benefits for restaurants and a growing market that means more demand, improving farmer profitability.
The benefit comes to opening up markets that we didn't have before that we had lost, mainly in the frying industry where high oleic oil has a huge benefit. We have the ability to get a higher heat buildup before the oil tends to break down. It gives the restaurants and whoever's using them a longer lifespan. And then the health benefits that go along a little bit with this oil got us back into some of the competitive oils that we lost out to. So that's where hopefully the farmers will see more and more demand.
Wilson adds high oleic soybeans are a win for the entire value chain from farmers to end users.
High oleics have zero trans fat, and it gives the companies a good alternative that we've got a great supply of it, and it's something that everybody seems to have a big win in. And then hopefully we can get more and more production and demand built in the near future.
To learn more about planting high oleic in your area, visit soyinnovation.com.
Thank you, Eric. Farm Bureau is getting vocal about the southern border. The American Farm Bureau Federation joined all 50 state farm bureaus and the Puerto Rican Farm Bureau in sending a letter urging the Biden administration to address the surge of undocumented immigrants entering the United States. The letter went to the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, Ag Secretary Vilsack, and others. Russell Boehning, president of the Texas Farm Bureau, says Texas was involved in constructing the letter.
The four border states put it together, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and us. We just pointed out the stuff that's happening. There's damage to crops, damage to fences, and other types of things. There's safety issues. Maybe have children that play outside or even folks that work outside. Basically just shared our concerns that we're hearing from our members and asking for some assistance.
That letter also states human smugglers known as coyotes are reaping a windfall from leaving people destitute. The fact that all of the farm bureaus have signed on to the letter should send a message about the gravity of the problem.
We're very grateful for that, and I think it sends a message that people recognize there's a problem. I think people recognize that it's not a partisan issue. It's a humanitarian issue. Just the fact that all the Farm Bureau signed on, and we're very grateful for that, and I think everybody recognizes that it is a crisis.
Boehning says local and state law enforcement officials don't have the resources to deal with the surge, and it's time for Washington, D.C. to address the crisis.
We're hearing from our local and state law enforcement that their resources are being basically overwhelmed because they're dealing with this and not being able to do your regular law enforcement work. The administration just needs to address it, and Congress needs to work with them. There's different ways of doing it. What's happening right now is not working.
The full letter is available at Farm Bureau's website, FB.org. I'm Andy Eubank.
Thank you, Andy. On Friday, June 18th, farmers, artisans, agricultural partners, and Indiana-based businesses will be returning to Monument Circle for Indiana Grown's fourth annual Monumental Marketplace. This one-day event will feature everything from locally grown food and drinks to homemade wares and food trucks. Indiana State Department of Agriculture Director Bruce Kettler explains.
We'll have about 80 or so vendors and people, Indiana Grown members, that will be there. They'll have tents or tables and kind of talking about their products and that they produce, make, grow in Indiana, if you will. And it's really a good opportunity for our Indiana Grown members to be able to just kind of connect with people that maybe they don't always get to. Similar, I would say the look and feel to a degree is maybe like a lot of people would see from a farmer's market. But it's just really kind of neat to be able to do it on the circle.
Kettler adds that this is an opportunity for Indiana Grown members to educate the public as well.
Not only what you're doing, if you're growing a product or producing and making a product, but maybe help them understand what goes into that. The need that you have to be able to, if, let's say, for example, if you're growing a specialty crop, what does it take to grow that crop? How do you go about marketing it? How do you go about, making sure that you've got a safe product? And so there is an educational component as well.
New this year is a beer garden for those 21 and over. Monumental Marketplace will take place on Monument Circle in downtown Indianapolis from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Friday. The event is free to attend. USDA says the fiscal year 2021 will be a good year for American farm exports. In the latest quarterly ag trade forecast, the agency says farm exports will total $164 billion, which would be the highest total in history. The report projects an increase of $7 billion in trade since the February forecast. USDA notes key factors include record export volumes for several commodities, including corn, soybeans, livestock, poultry, and dairy products. And another major influence is the continued rising demand from China for American ag products. USDA predicts exports to China will be a historic $35 billion. And JBS, the target of a cyber attack late last month, paid $11 million to the hackers behind that ransomware attack. In a press release this week, the company confirmed the payment. You can read more about this and find other farm news at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. This is Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today.
Just in time for National Dairy Month this June, American Dairy Association Indiana is proud to announce the Indiana Cheese Trail, opening June 10th. Indiana is home to 10 cheese-making locations, many producing award-winning cheeses, Colby, Cheddar, Monterey Jack, and more. Learn about the Indiana Cheese Trail at IndianaCheeseTrail.com. Log on and check out the cheese and support Indiana's cheesemakers. Brought to you by American Dairy Association Indiana and WinnersDrinkMilk.com.
Mark your calendar for December 14th through 16th to attend the Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo. Hey, it may be the first indoor farm show you get to attend in 2021. Exhibitors, space reservations are now open, so get your contract and details at IndianaFarmExpo.com. And remember, the show has a new location, the Grand Park facility in Westfield, Indiana. The Indiana Farm Equipment and Technology Expo, December 14th through 16th.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week, the weekly rundown of the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today.
When the price of corn goes up this time of year, it's usually because traders are fearful the weather isn't good for the growing crop. It's called a weather premium, and University of Illinois agricultural economist Joe Jansen has written an article for the FarmDoc Daily website trying to define the term.
The historical data, again, shows that prices tend to be higher. They deviate above the harvest time price, on average about 12%. But again, the range of outcomes is wide. Sometimes the market can be, right, 50, 60, 70% higher than it is at harvest right now during the growing season. Sometimes it can be 30, 40% below where it ends up being at harvest.
You heard Jansen say right now during the growing season, and he meant that. The historical data suggests early June can, but won't necessarily, be the highest pre-harvest time pricing opportunity. It's information he says corn farmers should make note of and use.
Obviously, farmers have some production risk. The data is not saying go ahead and sell everything ahead, forward sell everything. But I think you want to have a couple of tools in your toolbox. The big one being some forward sales, either using futures hedging, hedge to arrive contract as a tool to lock in the futures component of that price, or forward contracting, getting some sales on the books and opportunities to deliver at harvest, if you want to also lock in the basis component of the price.
Read more about weather premiums in the corn market from University of Illinois agricultural economist Joe Jansen on the FarmDoc Daily website. You can find a link at HoosierAgToday.com. The soybean industry is helping farmers manage pesticide resistance to decrease crop loss and input costs. The Take Action program from the Soy Checkoff partners with crop protection companies, commodity groups, and university researchers to help farmers do just that. Purdue's Dr. Bill Johnson says the program provides farmers the tools they need to battle yield-robbing pests.
The Take Action program is a checkoff program from the soybean industry to offer tips to reduce the impact of resistant pest species like herbicide-resistant weeds, resistant insects, and resistant diseases. It's really important to stay on top of pesticide resistance because moving into this next era of farming, we're either dealing with resistance to one of the three main pests on our farm right now, or it's in the area and we'll have to manage it in the future. So it is a long-term commitment moving forward. forward.
The Take Action program has resources available for farmers to manage resistance issues on their farm.
These specific pieces of information were developed with the idea to help growers manage current problems with these pests, but also to think about some of the future crop technology as well. One of the most popular things that we've developed is this herbicide classification chart, which helps growers keep track of the number of times that they use a specific herbicide in their rotation, even though the trade names can change. And this is really important for reducing selection pressure for herbicide-resistant weeds.
Johnson says you can find the resources and more online at IWillTakeAction.com. The Environmental Protection Agency and Army Corps of Engineers has announced intent to repeal and replace the Navigable Waters Protection Rule, and that has the nation's largest farm organization concerned. Andy Eubank reports.
The American Farm Bureau Federation says the intent to rewrite the rule is a blow to agriculture. Don Parrish, AFBF Senior Director of Regulatory Relations, is concerned about the focus of the rewrite.
There's a little bit of confusion about exactly what EPA is proposing here, but they are definitely saying that they are going to repeal and replace. They're focused on ephemeral features and adjacent wetlands. What they're going to do is probably take a significant step back from the clarity that the Navigable Waters Protection Rule provides.
Parrish says the concern is returning to burdensome and unclear regulations.
When you start talking about ephemeral features, features that are ditches or even less than ditches, they only have water in them when it rains. All of a sudden, you're really kind of glossing over the fact that you're regulating land use as opposed to water. If that's their target, the whole issue of where water ends and land begins, there's a real question mark on the landscape. And it's going to create all kinds of issues.
And Parrish adds the issue is whether the rule protects water or regulates land use.
I don't know where this is going, but it is clearly going to be a really detailed and a really significant fight. And I need farmers and ranchers to understand that this is not a fight about protecting water quality, because the Navigable Waters Protection Rule does that.
Parrish specifies this is a fight over land use. I'm Andy Eubank.
All right, Andy, thanks. Lightning struck a building last week at the Indiana FFA Leadership Center in Trafalgar. The Indy Star says while none of the injuries were considered serious, more than a dozen children were evaluated and two of them taken to the hospital out of an abundance of caution. The Johnson County Sheriff's Office said, quote, the children involved were not even sure that they'd actually felt something, or if it was simply a combination of the extremely loud noise and lights. You can read more on this story and find other farm news anytime at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, you are now up to date on all things Indiana agriculture. Stay that way by tuning in each and every weekday to Hoosier Ag Today stations like this one. We appreciate you tuning in this weekend and hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, and this has been Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.